Here in San Francisco, Lieutenant Aaron Wutada, one of the members of the U.S. Army who has refused an illegal order to get sent to Iraq, was celebrated with a pretty good rally, Veterans for Peace, Raging Grannies, a good crowd of different activists from around this state and nation were down there to express their support for him. He actually has not been arrested. He's being confined to the base up in Washington, if I remember right. And so his status is somewhat unclear at this point, but he's not being arrested, and that's a strong position to be in. When the U.S. Army tells you to get out of town and go kill somebody, it takes quite a little bit of courage to refuse that order. And as a commissioned officer, he has done exactly that. So this is the San Francisco version of the rally in support of Lieutenant Aaron Wutada. And this is from June 28th.
Turned out to be nowhere around. Saddam didn't plan 9/11. So much for the reasons they found. Iraq, Iraq, a war based on nothing but lies. Iraq, Iraq, a war based on nothing but lies. Imposing U.S. domination will not promote democracy. Dying for corporate profits will not keep America free.
Iraq, Iraq, a war based on nothing but lies.
Borders does not excuse war crimes. The Nuremberg judges said so. With torture and murder so frequent, no wonder Wutada won't go.
Iraq, Iraq, a war based on nothing but lies. Iraq, Iraq,
a war based on nothing but lies.
And now a song written by, you know, Raging Grannies are everywhere. This group in Rochester writes a lot of great songs. And number three, I wrote Tune of G, hoping we'd have a guitar here today, but I guess we don't have one. It's to the tune is Anchors Away, and it's War's Not the Way. War's not the way, my boy. War's not the way. The travel and the pay are worse to put you in harm's way, so they can miss you in your days. Give you a gun, then send you overseas to me or kill some.
Stop this bloody war!
thing. Okay, flip your paper over, and we have number 5. And I'm going to let Faith lead this one because it's a San Francisco. We have several gaggles of grannies represented here. We have the San Francisco grannies represented by Faith here.
All right, number 5 it is. Circle be unbroken as the two. I heard on the evening broadcast, and I couldn't believe what I saw. It was the president, and he told me he was willing to break the law. Will the Bill of Rights be unbroken when we make the law of the land? And let democracy slip through our hands. He said that essay was old fashioned, and it needs to be obeyed. Our right to privacy is not important until every terrorist is slain. Will the Bill of Rights be unbroken and remain the law of the land? Shall we surrender all our freedom and let democracy slip through our hands? If the war on terror is unending, the Constitution, it must go. We must surrender all our freedom that our children will never know. Will the Bill of Rights be unbroken and remain the law of the land? Shall we surrender all our freedom and let democracy slip through our hands?
No!
No!
Thank you, Faith. Glad you could make it, dear. She's the only person who's got a Rainy Granny t-shirt. We want them. We don't know where she got them. We got buttons and we got bags. We don't have t-shirts. Faith's got the only t-shirt. The next song was written by Gail. I'll let her tell you a little story about that one.
Well, right after 9/11, I went to a meeting of educated, sophisticated people who sat around and said, to my horror, that we need to bomb them, whoever they were, and kill their women and children. And this inspired me to write this song, written to a military march on purpose.
And the tune is Stars and Stripes. The young men we kill in a war are probably somebody's brothers. The women and children who die are just people like you and I. The fat cats who profit from war will get oil fields and bases and power. They make sure that you never see bloody victims on your TV. If you think that this war is wrong,
well, it is.
That's right, and we all know it too. And Lieutenant Watana knows it. And we're all here to thank him today. We just have a couple more tunes. You probably heard that our friends over here, Code Pink, and some of the Raging Grannies have been spied upon by the National Guard. They were well exposed for it, and we helped reveal they're up to their dirty tricks by going up and visiting them at their headquarters where they put on a big dog and pony show.
So we sing this to amuse the secret agents who are here.
In this case, NSA. Or we could say FBI. The tune is Santa Claus is Coming to Town, number 7. You better watch out. You better comply. You better not doubt. I'm telling you why. The NSA is all over town. Oh, yes, they are. They're making a list and checking it twice. Gonna find out each habit and vice. The NSA is all over town. They know with whom you're sleeping and every move you make. They know if you've been bad or good, so be good for the nation's sake. Oh, you better not speak. They're tapping the phone. They're working all week with the microphone. The NSA is all over town.
Woo!
And if
officer. Women, you're wasting your time spying on grannies because this is about as dangerous as we get, singing out of tune. Okay, our finale number is Peace Instead of War. And if you didn't get a piece of paper, you can sing along on this one. And then we'll turn the program over to some really good speakers we all want to hear to inspire us and learn how we can help Lieutenant Watada and everyone else who's caught up in this war. So number eight.
This is a sing-along. Really, really, you will hear the words and get a chance to sing. So no excuse if you don't have song sheets. Sing along.
When we make peace instead of war, when we make peace instead of
Constitution. Lieutenant Watada is doing his duty and upholding the law, which is honorable and commendable. All soldiers are required by law to disobey unlawful orders. We're going to find out more about that. He is facing the full shitstorm of the military justice system, and that's a funny combination. So he's going to need a lot of help. So money is going to be needed. So you can go to the website and start donating, and start telling other people to start donating. He's going to need a lot of financial assistance to fight this. Next up, Max DiOrio.
Hello. Hi, everybody. Thank you for coming out. My name is Max, and I'm up here right now because, well, for a few reasons. One, because I'm extremely inspired by what Aaron's done, and I think it's incredible, and I think he's going to set the stage for many more to do the same. So that's one. Two is that I work with a group called Courage to Resist, and Courage to Resist is a group that has long-term sights set on being able to support everyone and anyone like Aaron from within the military who's going to step out and oppose this war. So let's see. This is one of over 30 actions that are happening around the country. So I think we should be pretty excited that we're part of something that is going on all around the U.S. right now. And we're not just doing this, you know, to take pictures of ourselves and hear ourselves make speeches, but we're doing this because this can actually have an effect on what happens to Aaron. Right now, I'm not going to tell a lot about his case, but right now he's because other people will. Right now they've confined him up in Washington at Fort Lewis, and they had a gag order on him, but they took that off because I think they realized that was a little over the top and we were going to make too much noise about that. But they do have him confined to base for resisting and refusing to go to Iraq. And the more public support that we can drum up, I think the more likelihood there is that, you know, he may not go to jail. People remember a year ago, Pablo Paredes did not go to jail after a massive mobilization to his court-martial in San Diego. And that's an incredible thing for Aaron as an individual, but for us as a movement, to have someone actually be able to do this, and for us to say loud and clear, this is not illegal, the war is what's illegal, and George Bush is who's the criminal, and Aaron Watata is not a criminal. So what we're doing here today is really significant. I just want to say a little bit. I told you about where Aaron's at. On a personal note, I've actually been fielding some of the letters of support and some of the donations for Aaron, and I feel like I'm drowning under a sea of paper, which is amazing. And, you know, people are writing letters, they're donating online, but it's never enough. We have to do more. But this has touched a lot of people, so I think that we're not the only ones here who are behind Aaron, and that's really a great thing. I want to encourage people. Something that we can do that could reach Aaron directly is there's poster board over there and markers. So if you feel like the program's getting boring, you could walk over there and just write a little message to Aaron. We'll fold those up in a manila envelope and get them to him, you know, no matter where he is, whether he gets court-martialed, goes to jail, you know, is able to go free. So take a little time and just, you can write a personal message of support. And I just wanted to let people know that Courage to Resist is out there. Our website is couragetoresist.org. And if you know someone in the military who may want to speak out, who may want to be public about it, please get in touch with us. You can also access us through the website, thankyoult.org. So thanks, everyone, for coming today.
Isn't this anti-patriotic? Standing up for the Constitution, Iraqi civilians and the American people and the troops, is taking responsibility for an unlawful war, is the essence of patriotism. I'd like to introduce a minister from the Bay Area Nikkei community, Floyd Wacket. Floyd.
I'm here standing as a Japanese American, and I'm extremely proud of our history, because in the face of many instances of injustice, we've had Japanese Americans who have stood up and spoken out for justice and opposed injustice. I'm extremely proud, and so is the Japanese American community, of Lieutenant Watata, who in the face of this illegal war, who in the face of opposition, in the face of George Bush and his war, have said, this is illegal. I refuse to go. And that is a very courageous act. And we're here to say thank you, Lieutenant Wada, for taking that stand. And we'll stand with you. We'll support you. And we want you to know that you have a lot of friends and supporters here in the Japanese American community. We're proud of you. Keep up the good work.
I was in the Navy for 7 years, 64 to 71, two pig boats and a bird farm. And that bird farm, the USS Hancock, brought me to the Bay Area back in 69-70. And in 1970, the bird farm, the Hancock, was ready to go out on patrol one more time to Yankee Station in Tonkin Gulf and drop bombs on the rice farmers. And there was an ensign on board the Hancock in 1970 who reported to the press that about the braggadocio of the pilots on board. He'd sit there in the mess on board the Hancock and listen to these pilots brag about strafing water buffalo. Top gun crap like that. So he went to the press and he delayed the sailing for about 2 weeks. And then, of course, he disappeared. I don't know what happened to him. I'm going to have to Google him and find out. But there are men of courage that are willing to do some sort of sacrifice that are in the military. And they are very courageous, so please support them. Next, another veteran, Paul Cox.
Thank you. My name is Paul Cox. I'm a recovering Marine.
Yeah.
We've been regaled for the last few weeks of these stories of Hadatha, where the on November 19th, 24 Iraqi civilians were killed in cold blood by Marines in Kilo Company, 1st Battalion, 3rd Battalion, 1st Marine Regiment. These boys sank into a murderous frenzy when their comrade, Staff Sergeant Miguel Terrazas, was killed by a roadside bomb. They had no idea who set off that bomb. But in their grief and in their anger, they turned on the community around them, and they went into four houses and killed everybody they could find. What kind of state of mind do you have to be in to pull a trigger on a baby? A pretty awful state of mind. In the stress of being an invader in a strange country, one can, does, and will with certainty put some young men over the edge. Several of these men were on their second tour, their first tour having been the slaughter and the destruction of Fallujah. One guy was on his third tour. These were not just scared kids firing up the neighborhood. These men had been systematically brutalized, first by their military training, and then later by hellish combat, until they got to the point where they just didn't give a shit anymore. They had been chosen by the brass to be the trigger man for U.S. foreign policy. They had been put into harm's way for tour after tour after tour without even the minor leavening of influences of cultural training. They know that they are not welcomed by a large segment of the Iraq population, many of whom are out to kill them. They know that they're not fighting for democracy but for oil and empire. They've been put into a situation that leaves them vulnerable and with no options. Is it any wonder some of them eventually succumb to the terrible logic of kill them all, let Allah sort them out? These are things I know not just because I've read them in a book. They're things I know because in 1970, my unit, Bravo Company, 1st Battalion, 5th Marines, walked into a village in Ganoi, just south of Da Nang, and we fired up 84 civilians. We had lost four men to a single small booby trap the day before, and some of our boys were ready for their revenge, and our company commander was ready to give it to them. After all, it was a free fire zone, and these people shouldn't have been there unless they were Viet Cong. Oh, there was an investigation. But various majors, colonels, probably a couple of generals, and maybe even some face-to-face White House aide told him it was okay, and nothing really went down. In Haditha, if it hadn't become a media issue, nothing would have been done. However, since it is a media issue, some sergeant is probably going to do a year in jail, and a couple of officers will be relieved of duty and reprimanded. And several triggermen will be relegated to a lifetime of trying to forget what they did on that day that they lost their temper. Why? Why would we want to send our young men and women into a situation where they, too, have multiple opportunities to become murderers? Why would we want to train them and send them out to kill and then later say, oh, no, that's too much? Why would we as a nation want to say to our young adults, hey, dude, you signed a contract. You don't get to serve your country, but you don't get to pick your war. If I signed a contract to feed my country and then later was told I had to burn down the restaurant, who violated the contract? As a citizen, Aaron Watada has a responsibility to serve the best interests of his country. As an officer, he took an oath to defend the Constitution. He has honored both roles. He has refused to follow illegal orders to serve in an immoral war for an administration that is a criminal enterprise and run by a president who's a born-again war criminal. We have a responsibility, too, not just to support Aaron Watada, for he is an exemplary young man, undoubtedly with a keen intelligence, deep insights into our nation's soul, and the courage to take a path that's not very well traveled. And we've got to support him. But it is expecting too much of our youth to think that they will, en masse, be able to come to the same conclusions as Aaron without guidance and support and commitment and the hard work of large numbers of us. Woo! Those kids blasting away at their fears in Hadapa got there in part because we failed them. We've got work to do. Let's get at it. Thank you.
Next, we have Michael Wong, who's an Army soldier who got orders to Vietnam and turned himself into the Presidio stockade and refused orders. Despite his pleading guilty, the Army dropped three felony charges, released him from the stockade, and put him back on Vietnam orders. Mike escaped, deserted to Canada, and after war turned himself in again and got an undesirable discharge. He's a member of Veterans for Peace and works as a social worker. Michael Wong.
When I was in the Army, we're standing in the breakfast line one time. And it was a long line. It reached down to, about that palm tree over there. And I remember looking down the line one time. And I could see a whisper coming up the line. One person would turn around, whisper to the next person. That person would turn around, whisper to the next person. And we started wondering what this whisper was about. And finally, came up the line, came to me, the guy turned in front of me turned around and said, "They're killing women and children in Vietnam." And I said, "Who's killing women and children? The Viet Cong?" He said, "No, we are." And when we got down to the front of the line, what we saw was a newspaper with a headline about the My Lai Massacre. For people who don't know, that's where a platoon of soldiers, American soldiers, went into a village and massacred 500 unarmed Vietnamese civilians, old men, women, and children. Later on, we saw photographs of the massacre. We saw pictures of the women huddling together, pictures of the women down on their knees begging for their life, and then pictures of their bodies just sprawled in heaps. And what happened was we got a chance to see before we went to Vietnam what was going on there. And we heard from sergeants, training instructors, other soldiers who were just returning from Vietnam about other incidents. Incident after incident after incident of American soldiers getting pissed off and going out and slaughtering innocent civilians. A friend of mine, when I was in high school, I was in Army ROTC. I was a first lieutenant. One of my friends, who was a year ahead of me, graduated first. He had been a captain in ROTC. He was very gung-ho. He joined the Army. He went to Vietnam. He came back when I was in college. And he told me that one time he was sitting in a bar in Saigon and a bunch of soldiers came in right out of the field with their web gear and their weapons still on them. They barged into this bar, sort of drunk and being very loud. A Vietnamese at the back of the bar yelled, "Yankee, go home." They pulled their M16s off their shoulders. They sprayed and killed every Vietnamese in the bar. Those kinds of incidents never made the papers. A lot of us started becoming very anti-war. We started questioning the officers in propaganda classes when they told us that this was an honorable war and we had to fight. We started asking them why, after the French left, and there was a peace treaty that was signed, and there were supposed to be internationally supervised free elections to unite both North and South Vietnam, why did the United States create a puppet government and block internationally supervised free elections? The officers could not answer these kinds of questions. So a lot of us decided that the war was wrong. A lot of us started marching in demonstrations. A lot of us started passing underground anti-war newspapers hand to hand in the barracks. Even though if we were caught, we would get in a whole lot of trouble. Just possessing an anti-war newspaper was something the officers had forbidden us to have to do. And in the end, what I decided was I was not going to Vietnam. When I got orders, I went AWOL for 2 weeks, turned myself in with my lawyer to the Presidio Stockade, refused orders, ended up with 3 charges against me, all felonies: missing an overseas shipment, refusing a direct order, refusing to serve in a combat zone. 5 years each, total of 15 years. What happened was the Army had too many soldiers who would prefer to go to prison rather than Vietnam. What happened was they dropped the charges, released me from the stockade, put me back on Vietnam orders. As I'm driving out the front gate of the Presidio Stockade, I say to my lawyer, well, wait a minute. I'm guilty. All the evidence shows I'm guilty. I'm pleading guilty. How can they just drop the charges and release me? And my lawyer said, Mike, the Constitution promises you the right to be found innocent if you're innocent. It says nothing about having a right to be found guilty if you're guilty. So I hid out for a while. I went through just terrible mental anguish trying to figure out what to do. And I realized that there were 2 options. Either I could go to Vietnam or I could escape to Canada. So I escaped to Canada, I got landed in status, I went to school, I got my bachelor's degree, I came back at the end of the war, turned myself in again, pleaded guilty to long-term AWOL, and got an undesirable discharge, lived happily ever after. Thanks. Here's what Aaron Watada is facing. He doesn't know what's going to happen. He's surrounded by the Army. He's up against the entire United States government. If he runs, the FBI will come after him, just like they did after the rest of us. When you're in that situation, it feels like the whole world is against you. It feels like you are alone facing the entire world. During the first Gulf War, I was a draft and military counselor. I was getting phone calls from Marines saying they were against the war, they felt it was illegal, they felt it was immoral, they felt it was their moral duty to stand up and say no. And we went through all the options. And my way of counseling is, I don't try to tell people what to do. I give them information, let them know what options exist, and support them in making whatever decision they want to make. What I found was soldier after soldier, Marine after Marine, even elite troops who were supposed to be the bravest and the toughest, said to me, Mike, I think it's wrong, but I'm afraid to defy the military. And a great number of them ended up simply capitulating and going over to the Gulf, to the Persian Gulf. They said to me that they were more afraid of defying the military than they were of combat. And that was the first time that I realized how much courage resistance takes. Up until that time, I had been aware of how afraid I had been. I had been aware of how intense the anguish was in trying to decide. And I was aware of what a struggle it was for me. But when I saw elite soldiers say they were more afraid of defying the military than of going into combat, that was when I realized just how much courage it takes to do what Aaron Watada is doing right now. Thank you.
Got a little guest singer here. His name is Finian.
Hi there, everybody. My name is Finian Makepeace. I'm with World Can't Wait. And I, like Watada, I think this war is not a righteous war. I wrote this song after the bombing and the attack on Fallujah happened. You all probably remember that. This song is called Shattered. Bones across the desert
represents the over 2,000 soldiers who have been
discharged and called back to the military involuntarily through the Independent Ready Reserves. He represents the two Air Force enlisted personnel that I spoke to yesterday, calling me from Canada on a long extended visit. Lieutenant Watada has the courage to stand up and say, I believe in the Constitution, I took an oath to defend democracy, and the enemy is not foreign, it's domestic. And so we thank his courage for coming forth, for representing the thousands of soldiers who are not wanting to participate in war, who are in many, many ways resisting the occupation. And I've been doing some thinking about what it's going to take to end this war. I've been doing some research about the Bay Area and the role the Bay Area has played over the last 40 years. In this book that I'm co-authoring called Army of None, we recognize that there are three pillars that hold up and continue war. One is media that continues to tell us that there's something of value happening in Iraq and Afghanistan. There is not. There is murder. There is theft.
No resistance.
There is damage and destruction. So the media helps promulgate this war. But the second is the corporations. The corporations that are making billions of our tax dollars, money that is being transferred from our public coffers to private hands, that is holding the war and continuing the war. But the third and most important pillar continuing this war is our troops, the ability of the military to fulfill the mission. And even internal to the military, even reports that we're reading from security advisors that include Madeleine Albright and other liberals like her are warning that if we continue down our current path, we are not only going to see a continuation, a downward trend of the Army in particular being able to recruit soldiers and retain them, we're going to see continuing resistance from soldiers, officers, and enlisted alike, like Lieutenant Watada, who will make it impossible to have a sustained occupation and war. I read today Dr. King's speech, Beyond Vietnam, where he bravely stood up and said, civil rights and peace are one and the same struggle. It was 1967, and back then he said, because it is the poor, it is the minority, it is the disenfranchised, it is the oppressed, who are always told by Uncle Sam to suit up in that battle dress fatigue, take the rifle, go to training, and follow orders. And he recognized this in 1967, and in the wake of that speech, a huge series of protests called Stop the Draft Week emerged, and the biggest one was in my hometown, Oakland, California, where 10,000 people shut down the largest induction center in Northern California. Listen, unlike the large peace rallies that we see happen every year, once a year, a Saturday, where we all get together, we sing, and we walk as a community. Unlike those, this work of supporting soldier resistance happens every day. It's the kind of sustained, day-by-day grassroots important effort that everyone standing here could go to the GI Rights Hotline. We have a representative right here, Wendy, from the Central Committee of Conscientious Objection. They have a GI Rights Hotline that allows you to train and pick up the phone and talk to soldiers who are calling from Fort Bliss, who are calling from Fort Drum, who are calling from Germany and asking, how the hell do I stand up and get out of this mess? And I'm asking you today to take part in the movement to support soldier resistance, because that is the pillar. When we pull that out of the war machine, that they will not be able to continue. We stopped the war in Vietnam starting in 1967 by having the soldier resistors front and center in our movement, and we will stop the war in Iraq and Afghanistan and challenge fundamentally
clearly the priorities of our government that put profits over people. We will be able to do that when we have not just one Lieutenant Watata, but 10,000. And I know it's coming with your assistance. Thank you so much.
George Washington warned of a standing army. Abe Lincoln warned of the growing power of corporations. General Smedley Butler, General of the Marine Corps back in the early part of the 20th century, said the Marine Corps has been turned into a goon squad for the banana companies, United Fruit. He also stopped the assassination attempt against FDR. Eisenhower warned of the military-industrial complex. Actually, he warned of the congressional military-industrial complex. They dropped the word congressional. And I heard that even Nixon, I haven't confirmed this yet, but Nixon said, you want to stop war? Take the profit out of it. Imagine that, Nixon. Next, we have Pat Gerber, an educator and peace activist. She will read a statement by Aaron Watata's mother.
Aaron Watata's mother wrote this on the day that he refused deployment, which was 5 days ago, June the 22nd. And she wrote... Is this loud enough? Okay. I am the mother of Lieutenant Aaron Watata, an officer stationed at Fort Lewis. He is part of a striker brigade that deployed to Iraq today, June 22nd. Despite an unflinching commitment to his men and to democratic ideals, he chose not to accompany his men. His decision came through much soul-searching and through research and consultation with experts across disciplines, inside and outside of the military and the government. After weighing the evidence, he came to the conclusion that he could no longer be silent while atrocities were committed in the name of democracy. He could no longer be a tool of an administration that used deception and lies to make the case for preemptive war. As a member of the armed forces sworn to uphold the U.S. Constitution, he refuses to blindly participate in a war of aggression, an illegal war that undermines who we are as a nation and violates international law. Implicit in his oath as an officer is the duty to disobey all unlawful orders, for to carry out those orders renders him an accomplice to a criminal act. Furthermore, to order his men to participate in a war of aggression multiplies his guilt a thousandfold. His conscience would not permit him to do so. He believes that he can best serve them by taking a stand against war. In so doing, he demonstrates that one does not relinquish the freedom to choose what is right, even in the military, and that the freedom to choose what is right transcends an allegiance to man and institutions. As a mother, I have evolved from fearing for his safety and for his future to the realization that there is a higher purpose to all that has transpired. My son no longer stands at the crossroads. He has chosen the road less traveled. Come what may, he is committed to staying his course. This was written by Carolyn Ho, the mother of Lieutenant Aaron Watala.
I would be remiss not to plug something that's been going on for 47 years in the Bay Area. The Bay Area is a pretty unique community. It's a bubble. You all know that. You get outside, you go over the bridge, you go through the tunnels. It's another world out there. You got to spread this word out there somehow. But in the meantime, you got to support what's going on within the confines. And one of the things is the San Francisco Mime Troupe, which I've been a member of for 20 years. Been doing radical theater, not that silent mime. No, we're the loudest mimes this side of the Rockies. We're loud, we're obnoxious, we're disrespectful. And they've been doing shows. We've been doing shows about fascism, corporatism, imperialism, militarism, and this year we're doing about religionism. Here's a show. I'm not in it this year. I directed it. It's called Godfellas, Keeping a Light On in Dark Times. We take on the rising threat of a Christian theocracy in this country. Some posters here if you want to take them away, spread them somewhere, make sure people see them. Next we have, this is Max Diorio, Courage, Resist, and Honor. Our name has a tape of Aaron Watata's, what was this?
This is actually an interview that Sarah Olson, a local journalist, did with Aaron, and I'm going to cue it up here, and it may not be very loud, so if it's not, maybe we can just huddle a little bit. I might hold a bullhorn up to it, but let's see how it goes, because she did this interview with him, I think, shortly after he made his decision to refuse to go to Iraq.
Get closer.
I was born and raised in Hawaii. I joined the Army back in 2003. Right during the run-up to the war, and entered basic training in that summer, and I was commissioned at the end of the year in December. So I've been in the Army for a total of about 3 years now.
What were your thoughts and goals at the time?
2003, that was a couple of years after the terrorist attacks, 9/11, and I think a lot of people, we had the idea of that our country needed us. And that we needed to serve our country. And I still strongly believe in that. I still strongly believe in service and duty. I think it's a great thing that teaches you how to appreciate what we have and what our country means to us. And so that was one of the reasons why I joined, was because of that patriotism, you could say. A lot of people, probably myself, joined the military because they love their country. And they love what it stands for.
When you joined the Army, it was March of 2003. It was right before the Iraq War started. But you had some serious questions about the war in Iraq. Can you talk a little bit about how you came to join the military, not believing in the war that was happening at the time that you joined?
I guess, like everybody within America and in the world, we heard what they were saying on TV about the stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction and the intent to use it and the ties to Al-Qaeda and ties to 9/11. And I listened to that, and also I saw the millions of people around the world who were protesting against it. You know, I listened to people who were resigning from the government out of protest. And I took those things into account, and I realized that that the war probably wasn't justified until we could find concrete proof of the accusations that the government, the president and his deputies were making against Iraq. But, you know, I do realize that there are some things that maybe ordinary people aren't privy to, and that we should give the president the benefit of the doubt, because at that time never did I believe, or never did I, could I conceive of our leader betraying the trust that we had in them.
So you got the orders to deploy to Iraq. What were your thoughts at the time?
I had doubts in my mind about the whole war and why we were in the first place. And when they told me I was going to deploy, I was like, okay, all right, well, let's go. And then I'm going to start training for it, and I'll start training the guys under me to go. And I'll do it to the best of my ability.
And so what happened?
I guess some people would call it an epiphany, but it was sort of a slow transition. I realized that to go to war, it would be best to educate myself in every way possible on why we're going to that particular war and what were just the effects of war in general and the consequences of soldiers going to war and coming back home. And so I began reading, and when I reached a particular book, it was James Bamford's book, A Pretext for War, and after I was going through that, I remember I was at a training exercise, and I was reading it during my downtime. And after, I don't think I'd even finished the whole thing, and after I read certain things on how he was detailing the level of deception that the Bush administration used to initiate this war and process this war, I was shocked. And there was a point where I just became ashamed of wearing the uniform. I was thinking, you know, how can we wear this, something that is such a time-honored tradition, knowing that we waged war that was based basically on, some people will call it misrepresentation, some people will call it lies. But whatever it was, I think, a betrayal of the trust of the American people, and definitely the military and the soldiers. And so that was a turning point for me. And I began to think about things and look at things in a whole different light. And there were times, you know, I didn't know what to do. My mind was really in turmoil because once you join the army, you know, the thought process is instilled in you is that you follow orders without question. Soldiers are apolitical, and you don't voice your opinion out loud. So going through that really, I guess it was a duality of what do I do, you know, do I follow the orders and participate in something that was, that I believe to be wrong because it was founded on whatever you want to call it, misrepresentation or lies, or do I just go ahead and, you know, follow the status quo and follow my orders without question and just do what I'm told to do. And that was towards the end of last year. And at that time, I started thinking about why, you know, why are we dying? Why are we going over to Iraq? Why are we losing limbs for what? And I finally came to that point, I think the deciding moment for me. I watched, I guess, it's not really publicized in the news, but, you know, you see these clips of the funerals of these families, the children, the mothers and fathers as they sit by the grave or they come out of the funerals. The one really hard picture for me was the little boy walking out of the funeral for his father who was killed. He can't even face the camera, so he's covering his eyes. I just felt like that I couldn't watch that anymore. And I wasn't going to be silent anymore and condone what I felt was something that was deeply wrong.
Aaron Watada, you're a first lieutenant in the United States Army. You made the decision that you would refuse orders to deploy to Iraq in January of this year. What happened next?
When I came to that decision, I alerted my commander that I was a lot of things were going through my mind, my immediate commander, and I told him that I would refuse the order to go to Iraq, but I was still had a lot of things to think about. So he said, okay, this is a big decision for you to make, so why don't you take, you know, some time to think about it. So I said, okay. I think I took about maybe a week, and then he said, well, we need to know what you're going to do, because if you're not going to go, we need to talk to the battalion commander, which is the top colonel of the specific unit that I was in, the top commander. And so the next day I said, okay, I made my decision. I've got to believe that this isn't illegal, any moral war, and that the order to have us deployed to Iraq is unlawful, that I won't follow it, and I won't participate in something that I believe is wrong.
So you've had some time to think about this now. The idea that you may face prison time for refusing to deploy to Iraq, it's a pretty serious revelation. How are you doing with it?
When I first started thinking about it, I was of course scared, really worried. It was a loss of a career and loss of probably a lot of future careers with the dishonorable discharge, with that hanging over my head. And a lot of people, including my own parents, you know, tried to talk me out of it. Because, like any parents, they're worried about you and how you're going to make it and how you're going to survive. And I had to tell them, and I had to convince myself first, that I had to convince them that it's not about just trying to survive. It's not about just trying to make sure that you're safe. It's something that when you, I guess, you know, are looking your children in your eye in the future, or you're, you know, at the end of your life, or looking on your deathbed, you want to look on your life and think that, well, you know, while there was a lot of, you know, missteps and things like that, and I haven't lived a perfect life, that at a very important part of my life, when I had the opportunity to make the right decision, that I did so, knowing that there were, you know, negative consequences.
What do you think the U.S. should do now in Iraq?
I think the U.S. should pull out all troops immediately. It's really sad. It's what's happening now with the outbreak of the Civil War. It's something that we caused with our invasion and our war.
One of the things you've mentioned is your sense of betrayal. In a statement you wrote, you said, "Never in my life did I believe I would have to disobey an unlawful order, but never in my life did I imagine my president would lie to go to war, condone torture, spy on Americans." How has this shaped your current sense of duty to this country?
Basically, I strongly believe in a government that's for the people, by the people, elected officials are the servants of the people, as well as, you know, anybody who works within the government, including the servicemen, military. We serve the people, we serve to protect the people. And in that respect, you also have the president, who is the commander-in-chief, who, although he's our leader, you know, there's that relationship with us. And I think it's a strong relationship of trust. And anybody who's been in the military knows that in order to have a cohesive and an effective fighting force, you need to have a certain level of trust between leaders and soldiers. And when you don't have that trust, then things start to break down. And a lot of people are different. A lot of people say, oh, well, you signed the contract, so you got to go whether you like it or not. But in a contract, there's two parties. And yes, I signed the contract, and I said that, you know, I will follow orders, and I will go and do what I'm told to do. And there's times where, you know, I won't be able to question it and evaluate the legality of everything. And so I have to have the ultimate trust in my leader, in my president, and his subordinates to do the right thing for us, to do the right thing by us, and to sacrifice our lives if need be for only, you know, justified moral reasons. I think that knowing or realizing what the president has done in taking us to a war or leading us into a war that he misled us about has broken that bond of trust that we had. But I guess realizing what the president done and what he continues to do is something that I can't be silent about anymore.
Amy Allison again has a pitch to do for you guys. And don't forget, support this website. Send them money, send them emails.
So today has been a wonderful, wonderful collection of speakers and entertainers. Let's give them a round of applause. Thank you so much. Thank you to the organizers. Did you realize that this is one of over 20 of these events across the country? What I meant to say is 30. This is one of over 30 events across the country, from as far as New York, Kansas City, Oklahoma, and Hawaii, as well as
Washington, D.C.,
Washington, D.C., and outside
Toronto, Vancouver, Tokyo.
We are very in Tokyo and Toronto, and we are so proud to be here on behalf of the Bay Area saying thank you, Lieutenant Watada. Thank you for your courage. Now, having been a war resister myself, I know what it takes. It takes an exact, a substantial personal toll. Standing up and speaking publicly exacts a toll on your family, and in my case, on my health. It was something that wasn't like a convenient thing to do, but it was something I was called to do. And there are some people like Lieutenant Watada who are born to speak truth to power. And in order to support that courage, we must make sure that he is surrounded by the best legal support that he can have. Make sure his mother and father, his family, can afford to be in Washington, at Fort Lewis, for his court-martial. Make sure that we get the word out by supporting the website. Make sure that that we have people who can reach out to media so his name and his message continues to reverberate through the country. And the thing to understand is Lieutenant Watada is not the only soldier to resist the war, but he is the first officer to stand up and say, I'm doing my duty. If you haven't been to the website, which is thankyoulieutenant.org, you'll see the latest and greatest in terms of his media and his actions. And remember, I mentioned he's a wonderful, amazing spokesperson for soldier resistance. By the way, Lieutenant Watada is not a conscientious objector. So those of you who understand resistance as being tied intrinsically to being opposed to all war in any form, we have to think more broadly about the power of resistance in this war. You can resist a war and still be legitimate, still have moral grounding, ethical grounding, and be powerful. In fact, when we have Lieutenant Watata, those type of soldiers who are articulating a criticism and refusing to follow orders, it's even more powerful. It's more powerful. He stands side by side with the retired generals who made the cover of Time and Newsweek a couple of weeks ago who are speaking out against the war. The military, because of the folly of our administration, it's unique and it's interesting, but we have the potential to be short-term allies with people in the military who are saying that this just doesn't make sense. The whole military institution is threatened. And so we are standing united with people like Lieutenant Watata because we know he symbolizes so much more. I also want to ask you to get involved in doing counseling of soldiers. Remember I was saying that having a march is something you can do once a year. It makes us feel good for that one day. But our administration now has figured out how to make space for the big march and go on about their dirty, murdering business. However, soldier counseling takes place every day, and I want to encourage you to go to girights.org or objector.org and inquire in the Bay Area when is the next training so that you can answer the phones or answer emails from soldiers, airmen, Marines who are needing our support. Most of the people that you'll counsel will never go public like Lieutenant Watata, but there's a whole way that you can get involved. And if you want to know what's happening in the war and in the military, and you feel like the peace movement has not connected with soldiers enough, you personally can establish relationships with soldiers in a way that gives you a whole new view and a whole new respect for the power of soldier resistance, however it manifests. All right, so thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your support, your financial and otherwise support. And Lieutenant Watata, I salute you.
Thanks for coming out. We got one more thing to close this thing out. Remember, this has been happening all over the country, so this isn't just this little crowd here. This is a great crowd. You add all these crowds up, go to this website, you can probably find out how many people around the country have been doing this. And also, people who have been taking pictures, digital pictures, please upload them to indybay.org. It's I-N-D-Y-B-A-Y. I-N-D-Y-B-A-Y, indybay.org. And then they can be, the family, can Lieutenant and his family can see all the people who showed up there, a little support. Here's a guy named Galen Peterson. He's going to close it out for us.
Yeah, so, of course, thank you all for coming out. The element that I'm bringing, I'm just going to close it out with a hip-hop song. But the work that I do is counter-recruitment work. I work with youth in Oakland, a lot of youth that are disenfranchised by this racist, homophobic, classist, horrible, evil system that we be living in. And part of what I do is educate youth about the lies that military recruiters are constantly feeding them, trying to get them to join the military. One of the projects we worked on was getting artists together to make music that youth can relate to, but also educate them about the corrupt war that we see going on. Military recruiters, our mind pollute us. We watch our people die as they tell us lies. Time to stand up and take a stand. Speak out against the government's plan. Military recruiters, our mind pollute us. We watch our people die as they tell us lies. Time to stand up and take a stand. Speak out against the government's plan. I object to the obsession of war. My conscious awareness sees there is more. I will not fight a war based on corporations, colonial invasion, creating mass devastation. The liberation of Iraq should not include aggravated attacks. The torture and beatings of community leaders in Iraq is completely whack. I will not sit back. Instead, I will speak out and tell youth that military recruiters lie. They just want more poor people to die. I will not be part of an illegal war occupation based on racial hate and indiscrimination. How is the military helping our people? They say 1 in 3 homeless people are combat vets. What we need is acknowledgement that soldiers died, mothers cried, and the government lied. Military recruiters, our mind pollute us. We watch our people die as they tell us lies. Time to stand up and take a stand. Speak out against the government's plan. Military
private recruiters are mind polluters. We watch our people die as they tell their lies. Yo, it's time to stand up and take a stand. Speak out against the government's plan. When I say love, you say life. Love. Love.
Life.
Love.
Life.
When I say love, you say life. Love.
Life.
Love.
Life.
Now pump your fist in the air. For justice for all those resisting the war and all those that refuse to enlist in the military. Thank you very much.